how do you explain the same framework for the idea of the core? The other issue that you actually like to explain to me before I ask you, if you really think what is going to happen to the idea of the core? For instance, you want to think about how to bring on board more energy. And then the second last issue is, we actually at the technical level had brainstormed together with the South African Business Network on how we can start to conduct a workshop for people to use on ideas or any issues in general. And we actually went ahead of our check with the microphone. But we want your system to say, how do we get our community to actually understand what we are doing, what the issues are, how to take things forward. And this can be a piece of workshop under your leadership, where we bring in other communities to actually start making this decision. Because that will start the first of the intervention and make us understand what the issues are. This is one of the things that we believe the time is right, because that intuition has started to start to be looked. And lastly, this has to do, it has to do with how we improve our coordination work and impacting the progress of government between and the work that the city sector program is doing between the short circuit, the integrated city and the support program that we do, and the opposition and the CIS program. And in fact, focusing on the sector, I think this is the issue of the sector after that, and what we're doing to do with the sector. Yes, I think it does need some work on the situation. But it's not the same thing as the situation. How do we leverage the public that has been in the situation to actually offer the question? So this is more or less an interesting question. I think this is the point of how we want to start to talk about doing things for different people, but also to make this idea an evolution.
Behind the community, bring all the intermediate cities into the state to
explain to us about France, why it's important, how it works, and what we need to know. What we do, because we also talk to them about the possibility of partnering and leveraging additional funding from African Development Fund and other infrastructure funding, simply because we know that grants are not enough to sustain the long-term funding that we are going to have. So then what we do is what we do for the second thing. We hold a workshop for DC to meet at 60 in April every year to meet at 60 of our project. And we started to a point where we come to the Western Coast, and they have gone ahead to complement the work that we do in the national space, that guides the municipalities and the rest of the community. Currently, this piece of work would fall under the, our small town revitalization program that South is taking. What they're doing, amongst other things, they're looking at a regional approach towards spatial planning that cuts across a number of municipalities and districts to actually understand how do we cut long-term planning from spatial planning to review and how do we change the housing. But I think more details will be discussed later on the question around land manufacture. We have not done any work in the area of commercial land transportation, but through the Species Support Program, I know there's done a lot of work and good practices that we can adjust and use them for species and see how they can benefit commercial land. So there is a process that will follow the work that was done in the metro that is taking the way forward to assist other municipalities with this say, how can we adapt what has been done in the metro to apply in small towns and districts to the extent that we see done about things. We hold the same view when it comes to the definitive. We don't want to talk about long-term planning only in communities and nothing. We believe small towns in the process need to think long-term. For instance, if we have a community, some of the towns and our residents want to say, what is our plan? How are we going to respond? How are we going to deal with that? And that planning and thinking needs to be started. So the CF toolkit will have a component in it that addresses long-term planning from an energy policy in small towns and in small residents. Just I'd like to believe that I've spoken a bit around the questions raised by Honorable Greco on the short-term priorities of the IUGF, where I would say some of the things we're actually calling and we're actually ready to review and discuss some of the short-term priorities, because some of them we've done well, like any other thing, others we haven't done well, specifically others in the community and drinking. So we acknowledge the observation that some of them may have been some issues and how do you want to see the situation. In terms of the issue of my challenge, I think we clarified the environment that we and what our intention of doing here, unless I just provide you. We have provided some. Yeah. I will then for the first woman. My challenge is contained as part of the intermediate PC, it's part of the list of the intermediate PC. And that's why it's in there. And we are not doing any work with my challenge. Because it's all part of the community that we would ordinarily like our best basic program to work with, because they are at the bottom of the trend of the program in terms of implementation. So it might have been a misunderstanding in the title of the slide in which we were challenging, but it seems to be the impression that we are doing something in the aspect of the other. We're just sharing the list of but the highlights of them are the ones where we actually have some footprint to reach people to do it. But that's the definition of what we're doing. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And then, Chairperson, there was a question from Honorable Minister, which I would like to zoom into, which is very, very specific in terms of why is Makanda not part of the intermediate what I'm going to do with this question is, a fair response to it, and Bonnie will talk to that question as well. And it's also been a question for all the members. In terms of monitoring the work that we're doing on the issue, because we have been qualifying the system already, I think. Honorable, we will ask if we have some kind of medical data to check whether how are we monitoring the implementation of spatial development frameworks and to check whether I think we are helping us to achieve the the goal that you actually would like to achieve. It's all on the issue of the management and position of digital framework is a function of them being a mandate of the Department of Global Development. The trick around it is the extent to which we as the Department of Cooperative Governance are working with them to do this management. But at the moment, the Department of Global Development holds a quarterly forum where they discuss specifically which municipalities have SDF, which municipalities have many management teams, and they create a database that they track every quarter in terms of compliance to doing SDF. As to how they're taking this product from kind of the monetary system of food and SDF is one level below that, because they are not able to provide. I just want to add on the issue raised around some of settlements and the what's happening there. I want to suggest that we perhaps see how we can learn lessons from the IM interministerial task team on ALEC when it's currently underway. Because there's a lot of things in that going there to see how we can actually tackle the issues of ALEC and within the dynamics of different groups fighting amongst themselves. And the answer to this question might come out with how government actually is making sure that other side are going to be then the only person I'll talk to in honor of the key question around the new city is that there is a resolution taken through the president's speech on the development of the new city. And I know that there is technical work that's going on through the chair on that. In fact, there is something that we're saying by the team on what is our thinking on. I'm giving you a new city because there is, I think, a desire to say how are we innovating government. I think that's basically what is our thinking around doing things differently and innovating and getting information solution on the smart system. So there is a dedicated team that is working on, I think it's proposals around how to approach the different challenges and smart solutions. It's really welcome smart cities and the new cities that we have chosen. And the technical team on the way to the presentation tomorrow, so that's coming from the IT that we have to do. Jefferson, I'm just going to run quickly through some of the comments and the questions you made. And one was around the members of the PSC who were providing the report. And they are talking about the diagnostic report. And then you raised, I think it was a very, very important observation around what is happening in locality since Lamella in relation to the time frame that they give us in place, either to give us comments or to the council. At the moment, that's one of the risks that is actually impeding progress on how we run out the solution. Because it has, as it's right in the middle of the taken us a very long time to get comments on this, on the government system, and secondly, to get the council to approve the diagnostic system. In fact, they have affected us in the department of our technical government. There is a risk that we will need to learn how to manage the government as well. So it does pertain to the absolute system health in fact, and the funding. I think I'm going to pause here for now and allow my colleagues to address some of the questions.
Thank you. Makanya may not have made the list of the 39 because maybe the they may have passed the test in terms of the population density, but maybe not on the economic qualifications. But that doesn't mean that they will not be covered by what the program requires. They will be covered through the other programs that are still so the top 39 that we are focusing our support on are those municipalities that have been found to be that of January in terms of their population density, which is above 100,000. On the issue of the capital, I just want to emphasize on the point that my colleague made from about when we ask municipalities to develop capital frameworks, focusing how much infrastructure, the infrastructure that will be provided as a municipality, how much of it will be addressing issues of capacity versus your backlog, new versus your functionality, because we have to make sure that the infrastructure that is already being is not neglected, but is kept in a good condition so that it takes you a few more years. One of the things that we look at is to ensure that the municipalities also have asset management plans in place, and that they are taking an update. Also, I want to indicate that the Integrated Urban Development Grant, it is a performance-based grant, it is an incentive-based grant. So to the extent municipalities allocate money for maintenance, there's a portion of the incentive for the municipality that they get. So in that way, we encourage municipalities to focus on of maintenance, we encourage them to focus on ensuring that there are asset management plans in place, and to do that, they do not only rely on banks, but they also go on the market to borrow more funds to invest in their infrastructure. We also look at how much they invest in terms of the areas that they prioritize for development. So that forms a part of their incentive. So you would get a base allocation. In terms of what you get from other grants over and above, depending on how you're performing as a municipality, in terms of these areas that I've mentioned, your maintenance, your borrowing capacity, then you get an incentive that you can further in your infrastructure. In terms of the qualifying criteria, in fact, they are certain assumptions that the grant is making in providing this grant. The grant is aimed to support the activities of the island, but it assumes that certain things are already set in the municipality. It assumes that the municipality that qualifies for this grant has reached a certain level of maturity. It offers a bit of flexibility in terms of prioritizing whether the municipality wants to invest in infrastructure, as opposed to other grants where it's intending to go to. In this one, the municipality prioritizes itself on where it wants to go, because it assumes that the municipality knows its space better than the national government would do. So it gives them the leeway to prioritize themselves. So for us to have some level of comfort from national level for the municipality to be on this one, we need to ensure that the government is in place. We need to ensure that, you know, that the basics are done, the grant is being cut, versus its collection. So we look at five minimum conditions. The one on top management, the first one is on top management stability. So on that one, since we've been in all conditions that we have done, we're looking for at least information for 2 years. We take the average of the 2 years. We can see their financial needs, audited information, we don't just take the word that the municipality is working. So on top of disability, we change the number of days that were vacant to the senior level, For instance, if you have a vacancy of infrastructure services vacant for 6 months, already that municipality is not going to be able to do the grant. We want to ensure that if vacancies do happen, they get filled very quickly. So that we keep at the number of days where the position of senior management level will not be able to want to see the 10% or on average every 2 years that we need. In terms of all the findings, the mission must be nothing less than an unqualified audit finding. They may have qualifications or method of entity, or they may not, but we must be unqualified audit finding. We also look at how the municipalities spend this money. They spend it on what they say they need to look at to analyze the regular process and local expenditure, and we want to keep it at a bare minimum, and it must not be more than 7.5% of the operating budget. We also look at whether the municipality is able to spend on their capital on their capital expenditure. Whether they are able to spend on their capital budget, so it must not be less than 70% on average for the year. And we also check whether the municipality can be trusted with statutory reporting in terms of the section which becomes the report. So we want to make sure that if we do need any quarterly report that was due over the period of 2 years, we only need to do. If it's more than that we did not submit, whether to your provincial treasurer if you are a regulated municipality or to national treasurer if you are a non-regulated. So we want to make sure that when you are given the new grant, you can be trusted that the money will go when you get it. So those are the criteria that we need. Of course, we know they are stringent, but we want to ensure that the municipalities that get the grant really use it to what they can achieve. That is one of the reasons many municipalities are not able to get the grant. But when they do get the grant, we want to make sure that there are issues, I mean, especially on the top management stability. We know there are areas that are not able to attract the right sort of skills, maybe because they're so rural in nature. You find engineers is one of the most scarce skills, and you find they're not able to attract the right sort of skills. But with this kind of grant, we want to ensure that the basics are in place to be
to them also, so we want to maybe ask them that on the side of disaster management, I think the DDG did indicate that there's an internal capacity matter, which means that we need to keep up the capacity of the center. So we are indeed working on that. We are looking at a model. We are working with the National Treasury. So once that is done, we'll share it with you.
Let me just start with the one of the district models. Yesterday, in the portfolio committee institutional arrangements that are in place that have been now mobilized to work together, and also looking at the district and the geographic space for development and activity. So we'll therefore wait for that invitation where we put them in terms of all these different models, which the president will be launching on the 17th of September. So you will see it already in the public space soon, but obviously the opportunity for the engagement on the module, we still have it as honorable members of parliament. And on the disaster management, that's two things. When we spoke of traditional leaders playing a role on mobilization and awareness, it also includes them on the management of settlements, because they still have powers to allocate people, and they allocate land. So therefore, how they allocate it, they need to be trained and educated around issues of climate change, disaster issues, and so forth. They do that, they don't know on wetlands, know next to the river banks, and so forth. So that then helps not just for them to be mobilizing agents, but also to be players in ensuring therefore that settlement is in such a way that it's able to mitigate against disaster. And the other one on disaster, honorable members, I was once in my previous life a member of a global network of MPs on climate change, and got useful information there, and I've been looking in the room itself. Parliament did act when it was advised that the one day disaster came in Parliament and they put a fire in Parliament and it could burn down. And when I walked on the roof there, there are sprinklers on the roof there. So Parliament has responded to put a sprinkler, so then the fire, and it will activate and then lessen the damage. So it's everybody's responsibility. So all institutions, all departments, all even ourselves, cities, and everybody must then build and then be ready in terms of response, but also that includes practical skills that are like swimming, firefighting, or rescuing the old people. Because once the fire hits, now everybody runs, and you all leave old people behind. You all leave young children, bodily able people, they'll be running away. Instead of saying, amongst us we're trained in fighting fire, while the emergency services are coming, the community do something preliminary to save life, and once then the response will be coming. So it then goes on all of us really to play a role, and I was caught up in a situation when there was a drought bust in 2020, not just pointing, and the next offering going to an airport, it just happened within a second that, and there was a flood immediately, and our cars were floating in water. We all left our cars to float into the river, and then and all blacks, unfortunately, were standing on that pillar that divides the freeway, shouting and screaming, and then the white people were swimming to go and rescue the others. Because black country. So it was very funny because you could only scream, there's another one there. But no one is diving into the water to go and then help. So therefore those practical skills at schools and everywhere, we need to bring them. Remember in the old time we used to have what we call Boy Scouts. The Boy Scouts used to be readily made available community servants as young boys of the area who will then respond to any situation. So don't wait only for the big response. What is it that we do? And I have been saying to the disaster that they need to have a program of engaging with schools, basic education, and others to really bring back those particular skills. That's all survival in the initial stage of a disaster happening and so forth. Then on the issues of the land and the spluma, I think correctly there's been said that there's a land summit that is coming, so there will be package there for engagement discussion. It's going to happen end of October, beginning of November. Dates have still been engaged by the international ministerial committee led by the deputy president, who are engaging the issues of traditional leaders and the communities represented by the NGOs and communities represented by themselves to go and resolve on a number of policies around the communal land. And also to say that land is not plenty in the hands of government. The biggest land parcels in South Africa are privately owned, either by institutions such as churches, institutions such as individuals, institutions such as big business. They own almost up to 60% of the land of South Africa. 13% is traditional leaders through the communal land system. And then government could be around 27 or so. So it's not much that is in the hands of government. However, the Interministerial Committee has agreed to fast track land release, particularly to deal with urbanization, where the demand is high. And we then begin to look at who's owning what in terms of departments and also state owned entities. And with the state owned entities, it's still a big of a challenge because they say most of their land parcels are in the book value. It means once you put land in book value, it's an asset that you have given a valuation on it, and the price. So once you release it, there will be an audit finding to say, why did you release that land free of charge, and so forth. So those are state-owned entities, but those that are owned by public works and others, municipalities and provincial departments, there is a program to help them and to ensure that we release them. On Spluma, the resolution between the government and traditional leaders was to take the matter to the Interministerial Committee, look at the areas of challenge that the traditional leaders have raised, find each other, and then bring the amendments back to Parliament. However, failure to do so, the traditional leaders say that we will have failed in our intergovernmental relations, and they will have cooperated, but if government does not move, then they have no other option but to go to court and take government to court. And I don't think that the route will also want to see, because it's going to delay development, it's going to delay engagement and negotiation on the needs of development on certain areas of land. And we know therefore that the urbanization aspect is not only to the city. The urbanization happens because of new economic activities that happen around in the country. You go to James Vegas Fort, it's a new urban node that is arising within the rural area because of the mining that is growing, the chrome and others. And people are just congested that area. There's no plan, there's no engagement. People are just settling how it happens. You go to Lephalale, it's the same thing. And then you go to Bushbuck Ridge already. I mean, it's congested that area. And you look at the way people have settled, some of the pictures you might have seen. So we therefore have to then look and say, urbanization is an natural phenomenon. It's happening. But that does not mean that we then neglect the development of the rural area. And unfortunately, the input was more about urbanization. But the rural development, as a department, they have a model of rural economy, investing in that rural economy, and then in the investment in the rural economy, they deal with the socio-economic issues, road networks, and then other public amenities that needs to go. Department of Agriculture have also pronounced on agri-park, which is also economic activities that will arise there, including the agro-processing. And then also the Department of Traditional Affairs has embarked on the traditional leaders' agrarian revolution. It's really to then begin to deal with the need of economic activity in the rural areas, because rural are going to be important in the supplying of food to the cities. Because the cities will not have land to feed. The rural people, with that land that they have and the farms that are around, they will be able then to be the feeders of the cities. Like the Chinese model, when they realized that there were many people going to the big cities, Beijing and others, they then decided to reinvest in the rural areas. And that has not stopped migration, however, it has lessen the numbers of migration, because people now can get opportunities nearer to them in the rural area. So that is another model that probably we could then look at. So that whilst we manage urbanization, as people come, we are also beginning to deal with the causes of them leaving the rural area by bringing those opportunities nearer and so forth. And so then the issue of the the land also is an issue of the claim that somebody also spoke of. Yes, there are so many claims. 8,000 backlogs. The backlog is 8,000. And the court also came and said, the development of land, you can't deal with the new claims that were opened between 2015 to 2019, June this year. Until you first deal with the 8,000 that are outstanding, only then you can then look at the new claims that have arisen. So therefore the issue of the claims is going to be with us for a long time, but where we need development, it means we must then engage with the claimant and say, here is the critical development that we are going to see. Can you forsake this land and then be compensated with the land somewhere else? And I think in the Eastern Cape, that is the model that we are engaging with those who are claiming land around the charter, to say to them that, can we give you something 15 kilometers or 20 kilometers out of the charter? There's land available that some of it is owned by the state, and then compensate you for the loss in Lumtata, which is your original ancestral area, then to go to that one. So, but working with the traditional leaders, working with the community, that's the only way we could then begin to resolve. Development is not arrested by the world and to continue the development as well. So let me not then go deeper into the other responses because of time, and then that's to say, I think the department and the team that were here, we're able to take a full comprehensive information that you will use in your oversight going forward as the implement of the district report on a number of issues, because of this agenda session for engaging all branches in the department to come and tell about the mandate, the activities. And I think as honorable members, we are still going forward to say you'll be ready with your proper oversight on them, and you will be ready to ensure therefore that the reports that comes are comprehensive, informative, and then I suggest that some of your oversight and then meetings might be in the places where local government is happening, and so that we can have a good education. Thank you.
As a result of the 2011 amendments to the system tax, we have had the following impact that we wanted to continue doing and also to continue institutionalizing the gains that we made as a result of the 2011 amendments. As a result of that amendment, we were able to fill 1,211 posts where all those people who are appointed in compliance with the law at the time. And we are also working together with the Constitutional Council to ensure that we have the approval of all remaining vacancies. We are thinking to the House that all other appointments have been made in the county were made in accordance with the legislation and in accordance with the budget regulations that were made by the minister. And so we've also developed a comprehensive framework wherein all new people into the sector undergo such competency assessment. We are also looking at having a uniform performance management system for all municipalities in relation to us assessing the work that has been done by the government. I think that the announcement of the ratification of the 2011 amendment makes all these gains to follow this. It is after the court has now made an announcement in relation to the illegality of this particular law. Now, what we are introducing, the same amendment that it was in 2011. What I'm going to talk to the House, and we are requesting the House to fast-track the process of engagement with stakeholders so that we can go to the situation that we found ourselves in 2011. So in the absence of this limit law, we are able to use the gains that we made in 2011. The proposed amendment, just briefly, is to see to that we insert this section, section 54A. This section, Chairperson, makes provision for the minimum requirement for all senior managers in municipalities for them to be appointed to have. It also gives the criteria and the process that we should have when appointing senior managers. And in instances where appointments are made not in accordance with the Act and the regulations, the responsibility is going to be taken by the MEC, the responsible not, and the minister. In the absence of this section, the employees can appoint any other section that are cover for this section because there is no specified section that deals with the detailing the minimum requirement of the section. And it's important that we have this specific law. And we also see the section that we are proposing that even people who are appointed by a council to act as municipal managers and as senior managers are also expected to be using the requisite qualification, requisite expertise, so that we have the competency to occupy those senior positions in municipal. We have already stated in the absence of this section that we have. We are also proposing 77 of the Act to require that the finalization of the appointment of senior managers will be done upon the signing of the employment contract and subsequent to that the performance contract of senior managers. In this section, we are making a law and we force all senior managers to appoint them to sign the employment contract and to sign the employment contract. So, in the absence of signing the contract, that particular appointment is done where because it has not been completed by signing we are also putting section 57A, which has explained to the government last week. This section deals with us making sure that senior managers will be found guilty of misconduct in one instance, cannot be appointed in another instance. And in instances where the jump ship before the generalization of the legal hearing, also not be appointed in the next instance. So in the absence of this section, senior managers will be found guilty of financial misconduct, sexual harassment, assault, theft, whatever, they cannot accept a person appointed to another minister. It is important that we go to this so that the minister the right to regulate on the duties, remuneration, benefits, and other aspects of the minister on salary of senior managers. This also gives the minister the right to determine salaries of senior managers. So, since after the declaration of illegality of this section, municipalities can appoint senior managers and negotiate salaries as they so please. So there is no regulated amount that the minister does not negotiate with the administration. Section 56 deals with the staff establishment. This deals with the issue that we have seen over here, that most of the people are employed in municipalities where those particular positions are not in the organogram of the municipality. So this particular section is illegal for any other person to be appointed where that particular position is not in the organogram.
Not now.
Yes, Chair, it does make sense, and as it was indicated, I think there is a process for the false objective. As long as we just get clear on that process, I think, if we can, in the meantime, just get clarity on that, so that we know when we are going to consider the book, let's go to the program.
I think I
would
use